Hey, After Buzzers, you are watching the after show for Homeland. I thought R was for Rick, but I guess R is for Romeo. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, After Buzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
And here we go.
Launched a series of strikes against terrorists.
We got our theme song coming in. I know you've missed me. It's been 2 weeks. Hey, After Buzzers, thanks for tuning in. You're watching the after show for Homeland, where tonight we're actually have a special treat because we're covering episodes 10 and 11. And you can find me at Rick Hong, R-I-C-K-H-O-N-G. And I am joined by Carla Renata tonight.
Hey, welcome, welcome, welcome. It's great to be back. I am Carla Renata. I'm here with the after show for Homeland seasons 10 and 11. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at The Curvy Film Critic. Yeah, that's right. The Kirby Film Critic. I had to think about that for a second. It's been a minute since I've said it. So we're talking about episodes 10 and 11, right?
Yes,
so
we are.
It's 10, the flag house, right?
Yeah, it's like it's getting down to the wire.
It's getting down to the wire, and I got to tell you, episode 10, I was gasping for breath most of the episode. My mother thought something was wrong with me because I kept going, especially the end of episode 10 where he's Quinn is at the window with the gun. I'm like, oh Lord, but
right,
I've gotten ahead of myself.
What's going to happen? All right, okay. What I decided to do, since we're covering two episodes, I'm going to kind of just. I usually try to go in order of by like scene, but instead I'm going to try to just kind of go by order of characters and just kind of what's going on with them. And since you actually talked about Quinn, I guess we might as well start with Quinn.
Yep.
So like we open up and Quinn is going to a diner.
Yes.
And
he's trying to he got a lead through the phone tap of where this guy was,
the neighbor that, exactly.
Yeah, so he's trying to get a hold of him. Well, not get a hold of him literally, but he's trying to get him. But by the time he gets there, it's daylight and the guy is gone. And he ends up running into this young lady that he knows.
Yeah,
and
she doesn't, Nikki, the waitress.
Yes, and she doesn't know him in that state. So it's a little shocking for her. It's a little embarrassing for him. And it was very, that whole scene, it was brilliantly awkward. The whole scene was played really brilliantly awkward. But I felt bad for both of them because I feel like Nikki probably liked him at some point in the past. I don't know if she did.
He's a good-looking guy.
He's a good-looking guy.
When he's clean-shaven, like the mustache isn't there and the hair's cut and he can actually speak articulately.
Yeah.
He's a good-looking
guy.
Without
the stutter, yeah. Not saying that my boy is a stutter. Something wrong with him, but, you know. But, yeah, I felt like that was a brilliantly awkward scene that was played. And then I feel like Quinn and Carrie have like this love-hate relationship, like a brother and sister, sort of. You know what I'm saying?
And then there's also like that air of like romance, like kind of between them two. You feel more it's brother-sister, not a romance?
Yeah, I feel more brother-sister. I don't feel like she's romantically attracted to him, but I feel like she is protective of him like she would be a brother or a sister.
Like obligated?
Yeah, like there's an obligation, some types of a sense of obligation that she has for him for a variety
of
reasons.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, during the course of the time that the show's been on the air.
Which is really funny because when I'm sitting across from Leslie, she's all about Quinn and Carrie getting together. And I'm telling her, dude, I was like, there's too many more seasons to go for them to actually get together and too many things that can happen for that. So,
well, I don't know about too many more seasons, but
we got two. I haven't confirmed that we have at least two more seasons after this one. So,
but yeah, I don't see them as romantically linked. I see them more like two people that really love each other, but in a more brotherly, sisterly kind of way. Because whenever something goes wrong for her, he's always the one that's hell-bent on finding who it was that went left on her, who it was that he needs to avenge to clear her name every single time. And so, yeah, and then I love that in episode 10, now that we're talking about Carrie, I love the fact that she always puts herself in a compromising position, but this is the first time she's actually admitted that she always puts herself in a compromising position without any regard for the consequences, and then right after she says that, she does it again.
we've discussed it on the show, too. Absolutely.
Right?
She cannot not meddle. She just like she kind of gets into, you know, she just kind of keeps going. So with Quinn, what happens is that, you know, he goes from the restaurant to, you know, the house. It's like appropriately titled for this episode, Flag House. I don't really know how he gets to the Flag House. He just kind of
gets him there.
Nikki, the waitress.
No, not the waitress. The other girl, his crack girlfriend.
Oh, Clarice.
Clarice.
Okay.
Clarice got him there because remember she picks Carrie up and takes her to him. So she had to have taken him there. She said she gave him the phone with the video, and Carrie asked her, "Well, where'd you get this from?" She said, "I just shot it like 10 minutes ago."
Oh no. Well, I'm like running back to the beginning.
Oh, you're going
the beginning. So like where he gets a kid to like ding dong ditch. The, you know, but he just shows up at this house, and then
the little boy, yeah.
Yeah, and then he goes in, he already knows the code, so there's some sort of familiarity. I just didn't figure out how he exactly knew where to go for this house, but he knows how to get in, and then he starts having his flashbacks.
Well, he's a techie.
He's
a techie, so he figured it out.
Yeah, so, yeah, and then we see that his flashbacks actually flash back to him and a group of guys, which Nikki the waitress had referred to, and we see
having drinks and everything.
Yeah, and we see who I've seen throughout the season, the actor Robert Knepper, mm-hmm. who I actually had to look up, and he goes by General McClendon, and mm-hmm. he's apparently the lead dog for these guys.
Exactly.
And that's where Quinn initially sees the mysterious white van from earlier that blew up. I mean, not this particular white van, but how it kind of leads all to the conspiracy. The white van is there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then as we move from that, then we move to Carrie, mm-hmm. and like how you talk about how she's, yeah, she cannot not meddle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's Max telling her about what he's seen in episode 9 with mm-hmm. like the sock puppets. And she's so busy, you know, she's busy like just trying to get Franny back or like trying to go to this deposition.
Well, yeah. I mean, the fact that Franny got taken away from her in the first place, for any mom, that's devastating to have your child snatched, especially if it's due to circumstances beyond your control. So to have her kid snatched due to circumstances beyond her control and then not have the control to even see her.
Which she's a very controlling person,
exactly.
too.
Exactly. So mm-hmm. that's devastating for her. And so when they tell her, you know, that she gets to see her, and then that kind of sort of doesn't happen, it's devastating to her. And then, just to move forward just a little bit, just for the purposes of this conversation about Carrie, when she goes to the deposition and they call her, she gets out of the car, right?
Yep.
So she gets out of the car, and the guy is like, "Oh, if you ever need a ride, here's my card." And she's like, "Okay." And she's getting out of the car, right? And he says, "So, you know, you might want to check on that appointment about your daughter." And she's like, "How do you know that?" And then he speeds up.
It was
very Godfather-ish, I have to say. That was very Godfather-ish. And then he speeds off, and then she calls, and they're like, "Oh, yeah, your daughter's sick." And then when she calls back later, they're like, "Oh, yeah, that was a different kid." Really? You didn't know that the first time?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
But then, like, that causes all the paranoia when she's, like, in the room.
Right.
She's starting putting two together, and she's, like, you know, asking people, "Hey, did you do it?
Did the DOJ send me the car?
Yeah.
And then this happens. So then she goes through all that paranoia. She says, "I'm out. I'm not doing this. I got my kid. I got to go." She bounces. And then here comes President-elect Keene trying to put pressure on her. So now she's got Dar Dahl putting pressure on her not to talk. She's got President-elect Keene putting pressure on her to talk. And she's kind of caught in the middle. And she's been caught in the middle before. But every time in the past that she was caught in the middle, she didn't have a child whose future was at stake.
Right, Franny wasn't it. Right.
So this is new territory for her.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, you're absolutely right with that. Yeah, that's true. It's just normally like usually just her kind of being able to like do what she can do.
Mm-hmm.
But in this situation, like yeah, she's got no control,
mm-hmm.
and it has something to do with her, but mm-hmm. her daughter.
Yeah, most definitely. And then let's just go to Dar Dahl for a minute. He is like. He is like the Don Corleone of Capitol Hill.
He's been playing like Puppet Master.
He is like the Don Corleone of Capitol Hill. He kind of slyly with that little, you know, smile on his face kind of just goes, "So, how about blah, 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 blah?" I'm like, wow, Dar Dahl, it's like that. You just gonna like come for people, like give them a little hint and then you leave the room, and then the next thing you know, something really horrible happens to that person that he just met with, and then he just shows up out of nowhere all the time. Let's dial it back just a little bit. Speaking of him, so what's that character's name? Majid Javadi, right?
Yep, Javadi. We actually had Sean Tube on a couple episodes.
Like, okay.
Yeah, yeah. But Javadi.
Uh-huh. So Javadi, where is Javadi? Like, we see him. I'm just saying, you see Dar Adal having breakfast, dinner, whatever meal it is that they're having, and he's like, I'm out. I'm not doing this. You guys have used me for the last time. Then he goes to answer the door. The doorbell rings. Dar Adal goes to answer the door. The two goons or three goons come in, and they like, stick something in his neck. They take him out, and that's the last time we saw him. Where is he?
No, it was great because when we had Sean on, that was the episode that he came on the show. We talked to him. He's like, "Dude, mum." Like his lips are mum. He's like, I can't talk
about
it. It's
like Shondaland. He'll get killed.
Right. If you say something, then you're permanently gone. And I was like, you're smart not to say anything, not to let us know.
Yeah, he'll be a permanently unemployed actor if he tells us what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, for me though, I think that we're going to see Javadi again. Not definitely not this season, but you think he's?
I don't think. Because this is what I think. I think it would be too much of a coincidence to be a coincidence for him to show up alive. Like, I think it would be more intriguing for him to show up dead somewhere and then everybody trying to figure out how he died, how he got there, who did it, just like with the young boy that was in the van.
Oh, Sekou. Sekou, yeah, yeah.
So, just like with Sekou. Sekou died. We didn't know how he died. We know the van blew up, and they spent this whole season retracking and going after that. Mm-hmm. So my guesstimation would be that they would go back and try to, you know, writing-wise, figure out how he died, who killed him, and all. I mean, because that seems to be a pattern or a formula with Homeland in terms of writing.
Right.
They seem to knock somebody off, and then you spend a good portion of the following season trying to figure out who got knocked off, why they got knocked off, where they are, and who was behind it.
So you think? No. So you next season maybe?
Yeah. I don't think they're gonna resolve that this season because
they won't. No,
it would be too abrupt.
And it'd be too weird because considering right,
it would be too abrupt to go. Yeah, and this is how he died, and you're like, what? Really? You led up to all of this just to give us one episode to tell us how he died? Nah, that's not happening.
So let's go to Madam President Elect. She finally sees this video that Brett O'Keefe and Dar have put together that actually air. She's pissed.
Wouldn't you be?
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's absolutely, like, pissed. And, you know, she's like, I want to do something. I want a press conference. And her people are like, no, maybe not. You know, but, I mean, what would you do if it was you?
I mean, again, we're dealing with someone who's a mother. And, again, we're dealing with someone who's a mother whose child is now in the center of all this mess. And she says herself, as long as she kept her mouth shut for 10 years, he was fine. Then all of a sudden, the minute she opens her mouth, now he's being attacked. Now he's being dragged through the political landscape in a way that, you know, is not fashionable, so to speak.
Right.
So she's upset about that because president-elect or not, at the end of the day, she's still somebody's mom. And her son is still somebody that served in the country, and now they have this, and his memory, the memory that she had and the memory that she created of him was one of honor and one of respect. Now you have this video of him running away, and so now he looks like a coward.
Yep.
Whether he was one or not, you know, the eyes don't lie. So when you see somebody running,
or when you have the power to edit, unlike this show that is live right now, we're not editing anything. So,
no. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. When you see somebody running, and you see somebody running in a video, you're like, oh, dag, they're running away. Why didn't they? Even one of the guys in the video piece that they produce says, you know, why didn't he just stay? Why didn't he even stay to help me? He just took off running. And is, you know what's really interesting to me, just as a side note about Homeland?
Yeah, yeah.
Homeland is one of the reasons I love the show is that it has the writers and the producers have the uncanny ability to almost predict real life.
Yeah.
So this is almost where we are in real life.
Absolutely.
You know, with the Trump administration.
And it's kind of scary.
It kind of is, right?
It's really scary.
Like where we are in real life compared to where we are in television life on this series is parallel. And they wrote this series, I mean, not the series, but they wrote this season in these episodes way before any of these things that are happening right now happen. So it's a little freakazoid that's going down.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
But it's fascinating all at the same time. And the other thing about Homeland is that they really, But this season, I keep confusing years.
No, it's fine. I mean, everybody knows what we're talking about. We're talking about this. If we say this year, we're talking about this season.
They know.
They know why you guys know why you're tuning in.
Yes, of course you do. So, not only are they dealing with the types of domestic issues that we're having, but domestic policy that we're dealing with, mm-hmm. in the United States too. I love the fact that Homeland always keeps it real. When the first season came out, just to track for a second, when the first season came out, we were dealing with the whole Iran-Iraq war, yep. and all that. And so when Brody was on the scene and terrorism, it was right in line with what was going on here in America at that time. So they've kind of kept the through line going through all the seasons leading up to this one. Speaking of which, I wanted to just talk about Franny for a second.
Yeah, let's do it.
Franny... There's a moment where Carrie talks about Franny, and she's in that counseling session where they're deciding whether or not they're going to let her see Franny again.
Right.
Because, you know, she's bipolar, she's got all these issues. Is this woman safe enough for her to be with her own child, or is she a danger to her own child and herself? And she even says in the session that, you know, Franny has red hair, Brody had red hair. You know, every time she looks at Franny, it's a painful reminder of Brody. And I'm wondering if the writers brought that up to set us up for something at some point happening later with Carrie, with some kind of psychotic break in regards to Brody, because it's been a minute since she's talked about Brody.
And they've mentioned, yeah, exactly, and they slowly brought Brody's name back here and there. Mm-hmm. Like, they keep referring to him, and, you know, as they're going to be wrapping in a couple more seasons, mm-hmm. I think those are, like, the little, like, nuggets, mm-hmm. that they're throwing at us now to be like, hey, wait, by the way, remember Brody from season 4?
Yeah, you know, that didn't get past me. I was like,
Or season 3, I think? Actually, season 3. Remember Brody from season 3?
Yeah, that didn't get past me. I'm like, oh, they bring up Brody's name again. Okay. So that was kind of cool. And then let me just also say, flipping back to Dar Adal again, I just have to say, Dar Adal would literally throw his mother under the bus if he thought it was going to save his life.
Except if his mother was Peter Quinn.
Yeah, really?
Uh-huh. Oh,
he would throw Quinn under the bus?
No, we'll get into it. We'll get into it. But, all right, so we also see this in this, you know, in this episode, we see Saul is kind of being a little Jason Bourne-esque.
He kind of is, right? But I kind of love that.
Oh, no, same with me. I kind of love that. He's on the run because he thinks he's going to be put on trial and you know.
They're trying to throw him under the bus, and he's like, no, not before y'all figure this out. And then, you know, I will resurface. But I love the fact that he brought his ex-wife or his wife? I was confused.
You know, I don't know if they officially got divorced.
That's what I'm saying.
But definitely his ex. It is his wife.
I know she's his wife.
Mare. I think her name's Mare.
Mare.
Yeah.
And I was like, is she his ex-wife or is she his wife? Because I never really saw an episode where they officially broke up. So I was a little confused by that.
But they're definitely separated.
Yes, but I love the fact that he was like, read this letter and follow it to the exact letter and then get rid of it. And she goes, go to the corner of this intersection and this intersection and get in the car. And she's like, what is going on? Like, what are you doing? And she said, and then she was even confused because she goes, well, why are you running? You never ran before. Which, actually, I'm a little confused by that, too. He's never run away before, so it's very interesting to me that he feels the need to go on the run this time.
Well, because this one's about, normally, if he's, from what I gathered throughout the seasons, is this one's really about his integrity. About who he is and his integrity, and that's a conversation that they have.
But his integrity's been questioned before, and he still didn't run.
But it wasn't going to be. I don't think it was going to be out in public. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the issue where he didn't want his, at least initially, until mm-hmm. he starts talking to her more. Mm-hmm. Is that like, I don't want to be thrown under the bus publicly, not necessarily behind the scenes, and that's why he was, I need to get out of here. But as he's talking to her, it seemed like she swayed him, like you said.
Yeah.
That hasn't stopped you before.
Right, exactly.
And he's like, in his mind, you know what? I'm going to try to go do the right thing.
But then he had that moment, the moment where he was talking to Carrie, and Carrie revealed to him that she accidentally mentioned that he was in Berlin during her talks with President-elect Keane and other people. When she turned around to take that phone call from Family Services, where they said they were going to let her see Franny, and I just knew, based on what was going on with the camera, I just knew that when she turned around, he was going to be gone. But when the camera turned back around and he was still sitting on that bench looking all dejected, I was like, oh, this is going to go a very different way than I thought. Because I seriously thought he's going to disappear while she's turned around. Did you think he was going to be gone when she turned around on the phone?
I don't know if I actually had a... You know, I don't know. I don't think I ever, like, even looked that far. I wanted just to see the scene play out, which it played out pretty rough in that episode. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't want them to fight, but I wanted them to have a little better fleshed out conversation about what she did, why she did it, and his reaction to it. I felt like that was kind of glossed over a little bit to get to the other stuff in the episode. That's what I thought.
Interesting. So, okay, so let's...
He's like, okay, well, then that's your opinion.
let's get to Max. Max is, you know, he's at the... God, they had a crazy name for that place. But Max is, you know, he's trying to videotape secretly, and he gets busted. You know, he gets busted, and Dar's kind of beating him up, I believe.
Yes.
You know, and... I don't know. I don't know what you would do, like, in that situation if you know that you got caught videoing something and they put you in a weird room. And
well, what can you do? If you're guilty, you're guilty. You know, what you should be trying to do is trying to plot out how to not get to whatever room they're trying to take you to, because you know that if you get in the room and they close the door, anything could happen behind closed doors. So you really don't want to... It's like when somebody... It's like when someone's snatched off the streets, for example. This is an extreme, extreme example. Mm-hmm. But when someone is snatched off the streets, the last thing you want them to do is to get you into the car or to get you any place where you have to travel. You want to stop that from happening. Going down that hallway, I would have been like, I need to go to the bathroom real quick.
I
would be like, I have to go so bad. Could you just hold on 1 second? I'll be right back. That's what I would have done. I would have knocked that down. Oh, speaking of which, so what's, explain to me, because I was a little confused.
Sure.
Explain to me the room with all, when the computers and stuff went down and everybody got online. What was that?
Propaganda. Propaganda, creating fake profiles, you know, so it's kind of like alt truth. Like, again, like you brought up about how reality and Homeland are kind of blending together. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I thought the same thing when I saw that scene. I was like, wait, what? But
I was like,
basically just them creating a big propaganda machine.
And I did notice that one of the people in that scene is this guy that used to play Spinelli on General Hospital was like the major computer dude. He was the one that fixed everything and got it back up online.
Okay.
I don't know his character name because they only said it once. But he's the one that got everybody back up online, and he was screaming and yelling. I'm like, oh, that's Spinelli from General Hospital. I was very excited. I love when I see other people from other shows doing
absolutely.
Things that are a departure from what you're used to seeing them do, so that was kind of exciting.
Yeah, no, I was excited when Robert Knepper showed up or General McClendon showed up, too. I was like, hey, it's Prison Break guy, because I love him on Prison Break.
And exactly, even President-elect Keane, she was on...
House of Cards. Yeah, yes. Right? playing a very similar character.
Uh-huh. Yep.
They do a good job of like, hey, this person played politics. We'll bring this person to play politics.
Yeah. I love that. So, what else we want to talk about? Oh, what about? Let's talk about. I think we pretty much covered episode 10 pretty good, don't you think?
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's like two more things where Saul, you know, so Saul decides, okay, you know what? It looks like he's had a change of heart. So he goes to Carrie's. He's looking for her, but she's not there.
Right.
She's not there because she bumped into Clarice.
Right.
So she's not there, and
she's with Quinn.
Yeah. Or she's on her way to go see Quinn.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Saul is kind of going upstairs. He's hearing this computer chiming, and he breaks into
when he goes into that room. I almost forgot about that.
Yeah,
that room.
And now, everything is like all you got yarn and everything.
Now was this, okay, so was this her room or was this a room that maybe Quinn set up? Like, whose room was that?
I think that it's Carrie's room. It could have very well been Max, who's been like kind of helping out, but it's Carrie. Because, I mean, the reason I say that I want to say that it's Carrie.
Is because an appointment for Franny was on the board, too.
And she's so neurotic. Or, like, you know, she's so neurotic, you know, she has, like, that bipolar OCD type thing.
Because that was crazy. That was, so, like, serial killer time.
Yeah, right? Like, everything's mapped
with
out.
With the red thread going
CSI,
everywhere.
CSI. Absolutely. Absolutely. So
and
I
the
wanna,
post-its.
I want to say that it's Carrie.
I want to say... Because that's so obvious, and again, that's not usually how Homeland rolls. I want to say somebody else put that room up there, and they're making it look like it's Carrie's room. I'm going to go with that. I'm going to go with that.
We'll see it play out. We'll see,
I would love to see it. The fact that we both have different opinions about it is Homeland writers have accomplished their mission. The fact that we're talking about it and going, oh, well, no, maybe it's this. Well, no, maybe it's that. I love that.
No, it's an interesting room to introduce in the series I have yet to figure out what the purpose is or if, you know, hey, guys, by the way, if you know or you have your own ideas, please put it in the comments below. I'll read it. I'll talk about it next week, maybe, maybe not. Because, hey, next week's the season finale, so.
Ooh, season finale.
Yeah,
yum.
So, I mean, hey. But, okay, so now we're moving into, like, episode 11.
Yes.
And Carrie is taken to Quinn, and, Quinn is, they start kind of having this like long conversation and he gets really pissed at Carrie because Dar had told Quinn about, hey, by the way, the reason you're in the condition that you are is because of Carrie.
Right.
So he's like going off on her and the guy's literally going apeshit in this room, like acting like,
a moment. They totally have a moment. Cause he's like, you know, I was in a coma like situation. And when they brought me out of the coma, I had a stroke and that's your fault. So why did you do that? That's what I'm saying. Their relationship is very brother. Like that's something that a brother and sister would fight about. Not necessarily lovers, I don't think. But yeah, he was not a happy camper.
And exactly, like when you're also like dealing with a person that's like not already in like a good state of mind, then it makes it even worse.
He was not a happy camper. But then he after he comes out of all of that, then he goes on to tell her about what happened with Astrid.
Yeah.
Right. And then. You would think he's bipolar too, because he goes off on her. Then he tells her about what happens to Astrid, and then he's all, then he forgives her because then he saves her. I'm like, really, Quinn? Come on now. Either you hate her or you love her. Make up your mind.
Yeah, I mean, and he, you know, and he looks at her this at one point in time when they're talking, and he looks at her and it says, you know, you have to let me go. And at that stage, like, I'm trying to figure out, is it a metaphor? Like, dude. Just cut ties with me all around, or if it's like, you gotta let me go, like, and just, I gotta get to the door. go to the door and do my business.
I think sometimes relationships run their course, and I think that he cannot move forward with his life as long as he's tied to her and vice versa.
Yeah.
So I think that's what he means when he says, you gotta let me go. Because for her, he represents the good and the bad of everything that she's gone through, especially the worst part of it after everything happened with Brody. He was kind of there for her. So she clings on to him because he represents a very strong memory for her. With him gone, she kind of doesn't have anybody else as her person.
Right.
You know?
Because clearly, like, her and Saul were on the outs a while ago.
Exactly. And so. Now they're back in. You know, now they're good. But there's a fine line with her and Saul.
Well, that's like father.
That's fatherly.
Father-daughter.
Yeah, there's a fine line with her and Saul, but there are no boundaries with her and Quinn. There's a definitive boundary with her and Saul. So if Quinn goes away, then that Quinn and all those boundaries go away, and then she has nobody really that she can trust.
Yeah.
You know, and she can't go run into Saul all the time because Saul doesn't have the time.
Exactly. Or he's not in the country.
Right.
Or...
You know, Saul is doing his own thing and handling his own business, so he can't always be there for Carrie and Franny as much as he would love to, because he does love her, you know.
Yeah.
But he can't always come running to her. He can't always come running to her being, you know, when she's a damsel in distress all the time.
Yeah, but speaking of Saul, so from that computer room, he finds, like, that video, and he takes it to President Keane and says, hey, by the way, I know where this video is from. So that now, like, they're kind of like strategizing about what she needs to do next.
Right. I feel bad for President-elect Keane. I feel like she at every turn is being sabotaged, and she at every turn doesn't know who to trust, when to trust them. Like, she, a couple of episodes, she trusted Carrie. Her and Carrie were sitting down having lunch and sharing, you know, intimate things with one another. And then a couple of episodes later, she was like, I can't trust you. And then she just kind of left her in a garage, standing there looking stupid. And now she's like, I'm trusting Carrie again. And then she didn't trust Saul for a little while. And then she trusted him. And then she didn't trust Dardal. And then she trusted him. Now she doesn't trust him. I just feel bad for her because she doesn't have anybody in her circle, her immediate circle, that she can literally, honestly trust that has her best interest at heart. And that's kind of hard when you're the president of the United States. You got to have at least one person.
Hey, she can at least trust Rob. Although I was like, I remember in the beginning, I kept thinking, okay, Rob is the rat. He, the chief of staff guy, has got to be the rat that's like leaking. But he's not. But he's definitely not. Like, he's at least like the one confidant, you know, that she's always just like, Rob, come here. He's talking, you know. So at least she's got him. But I agree, there's too many people that are, I can trust you 1 second, I can't trust you another second.
Yeah, yeah. And again, it's very parallel to what's happening right now with the Trump administration. Because every day you're hearing about somebody that has said something or done something where he can't trust them, and he's either let them go or they have stepped down on their own. So it's, again, we're having some parallels with real life here with President-elect Keane. So
yeah, and eventually they come to the conclusion, like Keane and Saul and her group, that this office of policy coordination needs to be shut down. And Saul's like, this is what you need to do. You need to go head on and go up against Brett O'Keefe on air, because otherwise it's like it's never going to be the end of it, and it's going to be like a crazy administration for you. So yeah. She's like, yeah, okay, I'm going to go do it.
Yeah, yeah. So these are my questions. So now that Saul has kind of, kind of re-engaged himself with President-elect Keane, where do you think we're going to see him going in the next episode? Do you think maybe he'll get his legs back and be named like the CIA director and be like a really strong, powerful number two for President-elect Keane? Or do you think he's going to get thrown under the bus again by Dardal? Like, what do you think is going to happen?
Oh, see, man, I'd love to think in the season finale that Dar gets his. But when it comes to Saul, I think he's really, at this stage, he's just working on getting his immunity. Like, he was even saying, you know, the agency isn't the agency that it was before.
Right.
So he's just making sure that the truth comes to light.
Okay.
You know, that right is done by whether he agrees with her policies or not, but that right is, like, whatever, like, needs to be, like, righted. And if that means, you know, Dardal needs to be out of there, then that's what needs to happen first, more than him being, like, named. But
I'm thinking that because he was the first one to tell her not to trust him in the first place. He was the first one to say, you should not be trusting Dardal. He was the first one to tell her she didn't listen. Repeatedly, characters throughout the season have told her, don't trust Dardal. And consistently, she would trust him. And consistently, he would throw her or somebody close to her under the bus, right? So I think in this particular instance, now that Saul has shown her that tape, she's probably going, maybe I should trust this dude. Maybe I should have him as my close number two, because at least I know now, at least proven through history in the course of all this mess, he has proven to me that I can trust him if I can't trust anybody else.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, so then President Keane goes on air, and she has a big blowout with Brett O'Keefe, and I don't really know kind of the conclusion of it, other than, you know, she basically threatens Brett O'Keefe and says, your ass is going to be prosecuted. I know that you're behind the video. I know that you edited it. I know that you had this, like, secret underground thing. And he's like, what? What?
I know.
She's
she
like,
let
what
him
are
have
you
it.
Talking about, President Keane or Madam President-elect? I don't know what are you talking about?
She and, let him have it. This is what I do love about the last couple of episodes. For the longest time, President-elect Keane has been like this. She's been like icy, cool, calm, collected.
Or confused.
But these last two episodes, she's like, oh, but no, this is not going to happen. And I'm not going to sit here and act like this is okay, because it's not. And she's been very vocal about it, which I kind of love. And I love that, because a lot of times, just in real life, people will assume that women in power cannot be assertive when they need to be. And I love the fact that now that everything's kind of hitting the fan from all different directions, that she's stepping into her power. Whereas before, I think she was a little tentative about it and scared. And now she's stepping into her power and going, okay, wait, I like when she says to Dara Dahl, 60 million people voted for me. Who voted for you?
Yeah.
Right. Get him, President Keane. I love that.
It's like that. It's like the song, right? This girl is on fire.
Oh,
Right? Isn't that the song? Isn't that the song? Or did I get it wrong?
That's Alicia Keys.
I know, right? I mean, I do a terrible Alicia Keys, but I'm saying it's like, it's very much like, right? This girl is on fire.
Oh,
or
my
is
God.
It?
Well, yeah, this girl's on fire would be, but I'm gonna need you to get them singing skills on par. Oh, my God. That was hilarious. Ooh, way to bring some jokes to Homeland. It's such a serious subject. I love you for that.
All right. So I'm gonna move to Carrie. Okay. And, you know, Carrie goes into the house, but mysteriously the alarm is off. She's going around. She sees the van. And then from behind, the neighbor, like, grabs her. You know, they, like, have a big struggle. But luckily, who comes and saves the day?
Quinn. Yes, Quinn comes and saves the day. Let me just say this about the whole going in the house thing. It cracks me up, and this is so off subject just for a second, but when you go to see horror movies, which I do not like that genre at all because they scare me to death, but whenever you go see a horror movie, and it's a bunch of white people in a horror movie, whenever they go into a house and it's looking creepy or sounding creepy, they always just walk into the house. It's like, don't go in there. It's up to no good. There's somebody lurking in the shadows waiting for you. Go out the door. Don't go in. And what does she do? She goes in and gets the cat.
Because she's Carrie.
Because she's Carrie.
Yeah,
she's doing too much all the time.
She's Carrie, you know. And Quinn bashes the hell out of this guy, and you know, but then she does her Carrie magic and calls George Pallas to say Quinn needs immunity. Then the FBI's there, and you know, and then she starts kind of smelling the conspiracy, and she's talking to Quinn, and they're starting to figure out, wait a minute, there's like a whiteboard with like little tidbits. And this is where they find out, R isn't for Rick, R is for Romeo,
yes.
Which means something's going to happen on the East Coast.
Yes.
So she dials up, starts talking to Rob, but things start cutting out. And,
yeah.
You know, and then you see this like slow motion of them opening the garage. And us as viewers, it's almost like you said about the person going into the house. It's like, don't do it. Same thing. It's like when you see them start fiddling with the thing and she's on the phone looking at it.
Yeah,
you're
and
like,
there's always the close up on the doorknob. It's like,
there's going to be a boom.
Yes.
Yeah. And we see the bomb go off and Rob's on the phone with her and she's like, I need to talk to the. And then he's
nothing.
Yeah. And so
just
and
nothing.
she's all rattled because she was being taken back and some pedestrian decided to get in the way of the truck and he gets hit. So I don't know why she was so rattled by that. It's like, dude, if you're dumb enough to like jump in front of a car and get hit, then that's your own fault. That's your own damn fault. That's the way that I look at it. And she's a president. Just be like, whatever, dude. Like we got insurance. So
that's a lot going on. That is a lot going on. Let's talk about, let's see here. I talked about that. I want to talk about the fact that Franny, even though she's kind of in and out, she's been in and out of the season for a variety of different reasons, I'm almost interested to know how things are going to turn out with Franny for Carrie. You know, is the family court going to give her full custody? Are they going to place her, or are they going to leave her with the foster family? And what is that going to do to Franny's psyche? Because Carrie is bipolar, you know, is that going to have an effect on Franny? You know, when we come back next season, you know how they do on television, they age a child.
No, I know.
I was wondering.
I was actually wondering if that was going to happen, if they were going to do like the whole soap opera thing.
Right.
If you're a General Hospital fan, I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know, the next season rolls around and the kid has gone from being 12 years old to like 25, and you're like, when did that happen?
Yep.
It's crazy.
Or is she going to turn, right, are they going to age her, and then all of a sudden she's like a Dana Brody.
Yeah, oh, right.
You know, very bratty and angry.
Yes.
And or will she just be
I kind of loved Dana Brody. I kind of miss her.
Her storyline kind of played out weird, unfortunately.
Yeah, but I kind of miss her. She was a good actress.
No, she was great.
She was
absolutely phenomenal actress.
I loved her. And then I wonder, like, after all and everything that's happened, when is Carrie going to end up back at the CIA? Like, do
or
we think Carrie's going to end?
She?
I think she might.
Yeah,
I think she might.
At the end of this season,
I'm not sure if it'll happen at the end of this season, but I think it would be really interesting to have her go back because her being rogue has played out very well. But it would be interesting to see what happens with her when she has to go back and follow the rules, like really follow the rules. Because being rogue and breaking the rules, you don't have any consequences. You don't have anybody to answer to. Mm-hmm. But when you're back in a situation where there is an entity overseeing what you're doing, and she is notorious for breaking a rule, yeah, and having really wonderful excuses as far as she's concerned as to why she broke the rules, it would be really interesting to see if they took her back. Because of the reason Saul is even in touch with President-elect King is because of Carrie. Carrie is like the center of the nucleus with all of these people. Yep. She's the center of it. She's almost the puppet master instead of Dar Dahl to a certain extent, because everybody's actions at some point or another always end up having some type of interaction with her, or that their actions end up happening because of something she said or something she's done.
Yep.
Which makes sense because Homeland does center around Carrie. So I'm just saying.
All right. Well, so then lastly, the last thing we kind of see in this is Dar actually is using Max. He's not beating him up anymore. He brings Max and he's like saying, hey, I want you to hack into O'Keefe's computer, because he saw a picture of Peter in there, or Quinn, Peter Quinn in there. And now he's like, because Dar has this weird love for Quinn. So he's like, find me this piece of information. And it looks like we're seeing that O'Keefe's next setup could be using Quinn to be a possible assassin for Madam President-elect.
Ooh, that would be scary.
Yeah.
What do you think that is? What do you think that really strange relationship is that Dar Dahl has with Quinn? What is that?
Well, it was kind of like subtle. I mean, you know, he keeps saying, well, I love you. And
yeah, I mean, that's
and
it what I'm seems saying. He was
like dirty. He was like a dirty old man. And,
right.
And but then he also dropped it, you know, to Quinn saying, you know, I never did anything that whoever I put my advances towards didn't reciprocate to me.
Ooh, is Dar Dahl gay? Do we think he's gay?
Yeah. I mean, hey, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but I mean, that's, but
ooh,
like the way that
would put a big twist on every, ooh, I like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, but he has this weird affiliation with, that's what you were saying. Like he would throw everybody, like his mom, under the bus. I 100% agree with you, mm-hmm. But for Quinn, he just has this thing. And like, yeah, you think that Max is getting beat up. You think that he's about to be dead, but then Darb drags him into this room and it's just like, dude, go hack into that thing because I saw Quinn's face in there. What is that? And so now I'm wondering, next episode, season finale, will this plan actually go through, or is Dar actually going to be a good guy and at least try to save Quinn? Like,
yeah.
What do you think? Predictions for next week.
Yeah, I don't think Dar is ever going to be a good guy. Like, that would just that would just totally discredit his character from the whole season. It would just make Nick, no. I don't think he'll ever be a good guy. I think that he's kind of like, for lack of a better example, he's kind of like Gargamel in the Smurfs.
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean? He just is one of those people that as much as, or any villain in any kind of situation.
Yeah, he actually has the same kind of haircut too, right?
He has the Gargamel thing happening.
Yeah, right?
Anytime any villain tries to like have that moment to reveal that soft, fuzzy, warm side of them, reality sets in and they're like, yeah, see, now this is why I'm like this in the first place. And they just go back to being the way that they were. But maybe what they'll do is do a setup to let us know why Dar Dahl has become that person. Like, what happened to make him be so sinister and calculating? Because I would love to know that. He just kind of showed up on the scene being sinister and calculating, and we don't really know why.
Always from the get-go, yeah.
Right, and we don't really know why. So I would love to know why he's sinister and calculating, and what got him to that point. And how did he end up in Washington? Like, we don't even know that either. So, we know very little about him.
So do you think he'll get his in the season finale? Not death, but just like how they've been wanting to bust him, or do you think that it'll still go on for a couple more seasons?
I think it'll be a cliffhanger, because if they resolve who he is, where he came from, and how President-elect King wants to get him his in the season finale, there would be no reason for us to tune in for the next season. They have to have some type of cliffhanger for us to tune in. So we got. I'm thinking we're gonna think that he's getting his, but I think that they probably will kind of just string us along and make us think that. Because to me, that's more interesting than just like throwing him down and like killing him off. Like, oh no, you can't do that.
That's Carla's prediction. There we have it. Carla, where can everybody find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at The Curvy Film Critic.
Awesome. And I'm Rick Hong. You can find me on all social media at Rick Hong, R-I-C-K-H-O-N-G. Stay tuned for next week with a season finale and possible special guest. I'm working on it, so you got to tune in next Sunday. Have a good one.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.